to another exciting episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast. I am Burl Love, your host today, editor of The Cincinnati Enquirer, and with me back again, the OG, the podfather, Jason Williams. How are you, Jason?
Podfather. How we looking, son?
Not good. No, we're looking great. Looking good, we're looking great. Yes.
Always always honor to be back on the podcast, and I'm excited about this one today.
Yeah, well, this should be good. We brought Jason back in because our special guests are Terry Lukemeyer. He's a locally based filmmaker who has done a few projects that you might have heard about. 4192, about Pete Rose. He did Howie Lookin', a documentary on the one and only Marty Brenneman, and debuting Friday is his latest project, which is called Beyond the Bench, the Bob Huggins Legacy. So he will be here along with part of that Bob Huggins legacy, yeah. Corey Blunt, who was on the Final Four team in the 90s, went on to a great career in the NBA. So they're going to talk about the documentary, what they learned about Huggins. But before we do that, Jason, we're going to make this the UC basketball coach edition of That's So Cincinnati. We have a new coach who recently took over, replacing Wes Miller, and that would be a Bob Huggins, let's say, protege?
Yeah,
in Jared Calhoun. What can you tell us, Jason, about Jared Calhoun?
He's a winner, first and foremost, and that's the biggest thing that UC basketball needs, and I'm pumped about Jared Calhoun. He's a winner. By all accounts, seems like a great guy, and I've met him before, but he and I both wouldn't remember that. I was on the UC basketball beat for the Cincinnati Post when in his one and only season as a student assistant coach for the Bearcats, and was that 2004, I believe. That was his one and only year on on Bob Huggins' staff here.
Right.
Then eventually went on and was with him at West Virginia. But two things. He's a winner. Three things. He's a winner. He's an awesome guy. And
he's a Bearcat.
There you go. Four things. He's a Bearcat. and this has got to have UC basketball fans excited. His team score. Which makes him different from, I mean, what we think of the Huggs, kind of Huggs approach. His Huggs' approach is, you know, you think of defense and rebounding and toughness and, you know, figuratively punching teams in the face and not really known for scoring, although obviously Huggins has had fantastic offensive players through the years. So.
Sure. One of them, our special guest today, by the way, the big man.
But Jared Calhoun is known more for the offensive side than he is the defensive side. And they're not, it's not like they just let guys go in and score at will. But that's a little bit of a difference between him and Hug. So I think there's great, great reason to be excited about Jared Calhoun being here. And, you know, it's time for UC basketball to get back to being the winning program that we all knew it to be. And, you know, from the 90s of Huggs and on up through to Mick Cronin. Because Merle, when I think of sports, kind of the sports staples in this town, you think of Reds and Bengals, but then UC basketball and UC basketball, you think about in really recent history, you know, UC basketball was that one consistent winner that we could always count on here in our sports landscape.
Right. And I would break it down into a couple of eras. Obviously, you had the back-to-back championship team of the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And then we kind of, you know, hit the low spot.
No doubt. The 80s were bad.
The 80s were bad. When I was at UC during the Tony Yates era, we would go to basketball games, yep. and the place would be half empty.
The field house.
Yeah,
the old armory.
The armory. Yep.
Oh man.
And then Huggins came and then brought the winning tradition back. Like his second season, he's taken a team to the Final Four, and
wild.
We just went through that era of we expected to be ranked. We expected to, you know, get in the tournament, you know, not a bubble team, but yeah. And we lost that.
Yep.
You know, there were high hopes for Wes Miller. So before we bring in our special guests, do you think Jared Calhoun has what it takes to restore the glory?
I do. I absolutely do. I believe he has the resources to do that. Obviously, the conference, the chops, the offensive style that he runs. I think the way he's now, and this may sound, I don't want this to sound like it's a surfacey thing, but with the connection to Huggs, I believe is really important because it's going to draw Huggins back here. I think with Huggins being more present here, and I'm not saying he's going to be at every game or he's going to be, you know, at every practice, but I think now there is this reconnection to the Huggins years that is going to really inject, or already has, I believe, a level of energy that in the program that we certainly haven't seen since Mick Cronin's years, and Mick Cronin being obviously a former Huggs guy as well. So I do. I think he's going to win. It's so hard, Burl, to say, is he going to go to 9 straight NCAA tournaments like Mick did? Is he going to, you know, go to the, you know, consistently, you know, get to the Sweet 16 or the tournament? It is so hard right now with NIL and transfer portal. You're turning your roster over every year. And so I don't know if you can say that about even Kansas or Duke or UK or even the so-called blue bloods programs. Can those guys, even on a year-to-year basis, look back and say, wow, we just went to 10 straight NCAA tournaments and made a couple Final Fours?
I think it's tough, especially for, you know, large, not giant markets, but your Cincinnati area, you know, Cincinnati market-sized programs because of the transfer portal. If someone's not getting, you know, it's hard for a school like Cincinnati to keep a deep bench because if someone's not getting playing time,
absolutely,
they're going to go into the portal.
Yep.
So we'll see if Calhoun can create that loyalty, create that program that people just want to be at, whether they're, you know, getting a lot of playing time or not.
Well, retention's huge, and you know, and retention has to play into, well, what's the pot of money that you have to be able to help retain your top talent. That's certainly the question as a new coach. We don't know yet. And Jared Calhoun was just coming off just 2 years at Utah State, so he didn't really build that kind of reputation, only because he wasn't there for very long.
Right.
Of like, hey, is this guy a guy that can retain his star players? And literally, look, at the end of the day, like if the players like you and they like playing for you and the money's right, I think you're good. But money talks, and that's the biggest thing here. And certainly he took this job because partially, and that's what coaches are doing now. They're taking jobs based on, well, what kind of money, what is my budget to pay players? That is what it used to be, Burl. It used to be, well, what's the weight room look like, and what kind of amenities in the facility, and what's the indoor, you know, I'm talking football, but what's all the extra things around the program and the uniforms, and you know, you have a whirlpool and a spa in your basketball suite for the guys, and you know, is it like a, you know, a 5-star hotel or facilities like that? None of that stuff really matters anymore. It's now like, what's the pot of money that you have to pay players? Because players will come and they'll play in a crappy locker room as long as you're paying them well enough.
Well, I hope Jared Calhoun is the guy.
Yeah.
We're ready. This town is hungry for it.
Big time.
Because of the legacy of the Bob Huggins era. So I think it's time to talk about that a little bit, should we?
I think there's even a documentary.
Think so. Let's bring in our special guests, Terry Lukemire and Corey Blunt. It is special guest time on a That's So Cincinnati podcast, and as promised, we have filmmaker extraordinaire Terry Lukemeyer as our special guest, along with former UC Bearcat Corey Blunt, 11-year veteran of the NBA. We're here to talk about your latest project, Terry, a documentary on Bob Huggins. I'm going to say legendary a lot today, I think. The legendary coach of the UC Bearcats. Talk a little bit to us about what was your inspiration to take on a project about Bob Huggins.
So I had done a project previous with our executive producer, Alan Hilzinger, who's a UC alumni, and we were gearing up to do our next project together. And he asked me, what do you think about doing a documentary on Bob Huggins? And I'm very open. As you just said, I love telling stories about Cincinnati. Proud Cincinnati guy. I think we have a lot of stories here that don't get the kind of exposure that maybe we normally could. So, and it's in my backyard. And I was a fan of his and that Final Four team. So he said, yeah, let's go ahead and do it. And let's see what we can, you know, get. You know, the funding, of course, is always a big deal. But also, we have to get a hold of Hugs to see if he wants to do it. That took a little time. He's not a big texter, as you might imagine.
Does he have a personal assistant or anything that you could work through?
Alan worked through that one himself. Okay. And then luckily, we had guys like Corey, of course. Corey's done a lot more than just connect us with stuff. So he's been great. He's a full-up producer. And Alex Meacham, we give him a lot of credit initially for, you know, talking Hugs into doing it with us. You know, we were trying to convince him that, you know, we're the guys that tell your story. And as you can imagine, if I did a documentary on you guys, you know, you're giving your full trust to me, right? So, and, you know, his career, you know, as you know, it's wide and varied and stuff. So he wants to make sure somebody handles it, you know, whatever. So we convince him of that. And then we just move forward and trying to, you know, what former players can we get to interview? And again, once Hug signed on, I think it was a lot easier to talk to these guys. And because, I mean, that's a big part of the movie is their relationship today. And so I think most of those guys would do pretty much anything for him.
So, Corey, you were on the Final Four team. Yep. You probably know Coach Huggins better than anyone else. Were you surprised that he agreed to do it? It seems like he has lately shied away from, for various reasons, obvious reasons maybe. What can you tell us about that?
Well, I wasn't surprised that he agreed to do it. I think my approach was when they brought it to me, I knew the route that I needed to go to get him to do it. And I went through Miss Huggins, his wife. That's who I convinced to kind of see what these guys were trying to do and how it was going to be. Something that I think was definitely warranted for Coach Huggins at the point of his career, and I just thought it would be a good thing to be able to acknowledge him this way, to kind of, as they say, give him his flowers now, then you know, wait till he's passed away or getting some sort of statue. And when they brought it to me, I thought it was just a phenomenal idea, and it was a good time because a lot of the conversation amongst the former players, we were trying to figure out what can we do to honor Coach Huggs as a unit already. And then when Alan and Terry and those guys brought it to me, I thought it was a phenomenal idea. And that's why I took the approach to, I know Coach Huggs will probably say, yeah, but to get him to really be disciplined and on point, I knew I had to go through Miss Huggins.
I feel like throughout his career, yeah, certainly since he came to UC, you've been kind of one of those Hugs whisperer kind of guys. I mean, you're one of the guys that he's leaned on, and you've, you know, gone back with him. Yeah. Were you kind of almost like a creative, unofficial director through this whole thing, in terms of, were you in his ear constantly, hey, like, they're asking me this, or should I talk about this, or what was your role kind of in the, you know, the day-to-day, so to speak, through the whole project?
Yeah, I give credit to Alan and Terry for allowing me to even have my input and dealing with Coach Huggs, even though they probably saw me as a vehicle to make it a smooth transition. But they kind of welcomed me in and kind of brought me along the journey. And I think that allowed me to kind of see the full support of what they were trying to do and the value and how they and the professionalism and on how they were trying to do it. So it made me feel comfortable. And my mindset, I wanted Coach to feel comfortable, too, because I was involved in the daily activities and seeing what they wanted to do. And I was able to kind of translate it over to him. And he jumped in with all arms and was like, okay, I see where you guys are going with this. And first of all, how can I support? And I want to make sure this thing goes smoothly. And he did that. No.
What did Corey, what does Bob Huggins mean to you? And I'm going to ask it like in a two-parter, as a young man, as one of his players, yeah. And then today.
You know, that's a funny question because I had success in high school and I had success in junior college. I'm a junior college transfer here at the University of Cincinnati. But until I got to the University of Cincinnati, I don't think I really defined the type of player that I needed to be and that I wanted to be because I was just kind of drifting at those levels and being successful. When I got here, I kind of found out that there was a certain type of discipline you must have. And there was a certain type of discipline that was going to be given to you in a way that you weren't familiar with, if you get what I'm saying. Huggs brought a whole different dynamic of coaching that I
was, ever was it, I think I know what you're getting at. Did you hate him at times?
I couldn't stand him a lot of times. But that was the thing. Like, I remember I had a conversation with him. Like, I had success already. Why do you got to bring it to me this way to bring that level of success out or feel I need that now? And he pretty much gave me his point of view. And at first, I didn't agree with it. But then as we went along, I kind of understood the methods of his madness. And when I bought in, the success just started pouring out of my system. So that immediately made me feel comfortable. And I understood what I was brought here to do. And luckily, it worked out for me.
Terry, along those lines, as Corey talks about his relationship with Huggs, that's the whole project, is it? You've got... How many players former players did you end up interviewing from throughout his career, even from Walsh, what was Walsh College at the time?
We have representatives of pretty much every place that he's been, including his high school. That I blame on my executive producer, Alan. He would not stop inviting these guys.
No,
that's such a long career.
So it's like a six-hour documentary.
I mean, it could have been. We thought about doing a series on it because it was so many. And you feel like, because a lot of stuff, it's an hour and 50 minutes and you lose a lot of stuff that were great stories from these guys. And you're going, man, I don't want to cut that. And you fall in love with it. But it's, good thing is, back to the sales agent, he's like, well, we'll see what bites and maybe because we have it, we can extend it and stuff. But yeah, just going out and getting these guys to sit down and do it again. Thanks to Corey. Thanks to Alex. Alan getting a hold of these guys. And a lot of them are still today. They're like, man, I wish I would have gotten to be a part of it. And it's like we just had to cut it off at a certain point.
Sure.
To do that. So
Alan was giving us the 40, you talked to 40 former players. Is that
40
right?
40 interviewees. 40 interviews. Total. But yeah,
but they helped guide, obviously. Was there a big one big theme takeaway from each person that you interviewed?
So I pride myself on doing pretty good research. I didn't know anything about Huggs really except being a fan.
Sure.
And that team. So I probably experienced it like all of us guys sitting watching, him coach. Like he's Bobby Knight Jr. He's going to be crazy. So I wanted to be tight with my research so I knew what I was asking. As you go along and you're asking these questions, you realize that there are common themes at that point. And, people like Corey would tell me a little bit about the relationship so you could expand on that. But each of the players have their own individual experiences, of course.
Sure.
And Huggs ended up being totally 180 degrees in what I thought, because I thought he was going to be a hard ass to me. Yeah. Like, oh, if I mess up a question, he's going to be all over me. But he's so chill and so – I was almost
Did you have to convince him to get his energy up?
Yeah.
Because he's like, so monotone. Like,
yeah. He doesn't know really anything about that.
He's a complex character, as we all in this room can agree. But one of the things is I always found that fascinating about him is that, you see this kind of raging, crazy guy on the sideline, but you know, when he'd go to a press conference or you'd interview him on the side, like, he was like, I can't even hear you, man. Like, but he didn't.
But you probably experienced how he could call you out or something, right?
Oh yeah, oddly, he loves the spotlight, and yet he doesn't.
Yeah.
Like, he's a little bit of an introvert in that way, right? I mean,
And it was weird because, again, I had no expectations of that, and these guys let me do my thing as a director. So I'm kind of going with it, and I don't know if you've seen 4192, but when I did the Pete thing, he's such a huge over-the-top personality, and I love these guys that tell their own story like that. And I thought, well, Hug's charismatic. And I get there, I'm like, he's just not giving me anything.
But I think this is awesome, that because that's like – this is great that – I mean, even though it seems kind of – but these are things that probably the casual UC Bearcats fan who loves the Bob Huggins era – you know, the Corey Blunts and Terry Nelsons and Danny Fortson and Kenny Martin, like all those guys are like, man, this guy, this is one of the big characters.
What a great roster you just took through, by the way.
Steve Logan, no offense to Corey, is my all-time favorite.
No question. Mine too. That's one of my favorites.
I mean, hands down, there's no one close to Steve Logan.
You guys are built to like, that's why you like it.
Exactly. As Hugs once said, he gives hope to fat people. So that was one of his lines. He did. Yeah. That's hilarious. But no, I'm glad, like, it's interesting.
Yeah, it turned out to be, you know, a great thing because he was, you know, of course, the backbone of the story because we're talking about. But the players were so freaking charismatic. I mean, they give everything. They're funny, of course. Great, great insight stories that you're going to see. But it's also heartbreaking in a lot of ways. There's some sad stories in there. And I always say that. I think you're going to laugh, you're going to cry, which is what I like in a film. It's not, you know, a lot of documentaries. We talk about 30 for 30s. Some of those are just kind of highlights and here's the thing. And they don't have a lot of emotion to it. So I'm really excited about, you know, all those guys giving so much on camera.
Yeah. You
know. How I have not seen it. I don't think anyone has seen it, right? You have not had your world debut yet. But nice. One of the questions I think people might have because of the complexity of Bob Huggins is, do you shy away from some of his not so shining moments in this documentary, or do you hit him head on?
We tell it all, and you know, we felt that's important to take that ride. It's a roller coaster, and that's what I, you know, a friend of mine was asking me. You know, you seem to do these controversial characters, and I'm like, I'm not really setting out to do a controversial character, but when I did the Pete thing, it's very similar to Hugs. I'm like, you know, here's guys that did some amazing things on the planet that we're living and breathing. And yeah, they're human. And yes, they probably have more faults than maybe the average person. But you're dealing with that kind of thing in a 90-minute.
Or they have faults like all of us, but they are under the spotlight.
And they're under the spotlight, which, of course, amplifies. Which,
100%. Yeah.
And I always said that, too. I mean, you know, under the Pete thing, if, you know, an average mediocre player were gambling, nobody cares. It's Pete Rose, Bob Huggins. You know, how many DUIs out there, you know, or whatever, you know, for mediocre people. But this guy, it's a spotlight on these people. And we didn't want to shy away with it. And I actually, that's a big thing that Corey was able to do because, you know, Huggs was giving and stuff, but I feel he really trusted us to handle that because of that guy. You know, sitting there and then Corey would just say, dude, you got to tell it.
Yeah.
You know, he would tell him and I'd sit there and like, you know, ask him the questions, but you know, it was great to have him be able to support.
Oh, so you were right there, Corey, you were right there as they're doing interview. You guys go up to his house in Morgantown.
Yeah, Morgantown. Yeah. I was there. That's the thing that I appreciate these guys for letting me tag along with that. But I think the fact that I wanted him to really feel comfortable and I've had my own situations and I kind of expressed to him, like, the good thing about it is you had that situation and you were still able to carry on. So don't hold that against you. A lot of people that love you done forgave you for it.
Right.
Now you can't keep making the same damn mistake, but you know, you just want to be able to say, all right, here's an opportunity for you to face this thing head on. Everybody's done had their opinions without knowing what happened. Here's your chance to tell your side of it, and have people understand kind of why things happen. And I think you did a good job in the documentary expressing that.
It's so much about, when I think of Hugs, it is so much about relationships with Corey and all the players that he's had over the years. Is that really the crux of the documentary, or are you able to even, do you get into like some specific seasons the Final Four season, or he had Final Four in West Virginia season. Do you get, do you touch on the basketball piece? I know it sounds funny to say, no, but no, like, do you touch a lot on that saying, yeah. part of it, or is
I
it
like
more
to
on the
that.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, the thing that I really, as a former player, as a fan of his, I never could understand even how he became who he was.
Yeah.
And I think this documentary will allow you to see that his DNA, to me, was predicated on being a great coach. I mean, he had that. It's like his father was a great coach. I didn't know that when he recruited me. His father was a great coach. I didn't know that when he was coaching me. And then to see his style and how he brought it to us kind of gave it a reflection on how he was coached, to come to find out. It blew me away when one of Hug's teammates said Hug used to get kicked out of practice all the time.
By his dad, right?
Yeah. I'm like, well, damn, that was me, you know what I mean? So I'm like, okay, now I'm really understanding that. So I think people that appreciate him, and especially fans here in in Cincinnati, will get to see the full spectrum of who this guy really is and how he became who he was, but then how he had the success he had while he was here. I think they did a phenomenal job of explaining that.
So you do touch on Charlie Huggins, his dad, then, like, because that's a story that I think we don't really know a lot about, and just how Charlie kind of molded Bob.
Yeah. So again, going back to the research thing, you know, I start with the base of his coaching career, you know, legendary stuff, and work outside of that. So I go back to the roots, as Corey was just saying, and you go, okay, so Charlie Huggins in the Ohio Hall of Fame. Okay, so now, you know, it becomes a father-son story anyway. And I think that theme carried through to his players. Eric Martin says a great thing about, you know, he had the Charlie chip on his shoulder because his dad was very hard on him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but he shaped him. And Huggs had a great career as a high school player and college. And then
he was tough.
Like Corey said, Johnny, you know, takes that to the next level with these guys. And so I think that's a big theme.
Went to OU originally.
Yeah. You know, that was my thing. I used to give him trash all the time. Like, man, I ought to bust your ass. And he like, oh, no, you better check my resume. Like, man, I don't even have no newspaper clippings to go back to even find out what you did. But when I saw this, and you see the 55 points a game, and him just, I'm like, holy, I almost had to call and apologize. You know, like, okay, you were a beast, you know? Yeah. And I could see how you were able to at least talk the trash you were talking to me, because you probably would have been able to hold your own at that point. And that's definitely,
I love it.
Yeah, definitely exploited in the documentary.
I love it that you're touching on those. And again, those are things that, like, even some of the most diehard UC basketball fans maybe wouldn't know about the fact that how his dad molded him. Yeah. And, we know a lot about, you know, Bill Cook wrote a book about the relate. And I think
I used that book as a reference.
Yeah. I think Corey, you participated with that too. And, so I love that. I love that you're touching on the real human element of.
Yeah, I just feel like you can connect that way to it. Yeah. And instead of, like I said, there's so many, you know, we put athletes on pedestals, coach, you know, people that do things. But again, I like the fallibility of the human side of that. And it was great to see Huggs just give so much of that. You wouldn't think, you know, because you've dealt with his press conferences. He's probably, you know, kind of stoic and all this stuff. But he just let us in there, and it was great. Yeah.
So, Corey, out of everyone in this studio right now, you probably know Huggins the best. Was there anything that came out during this project that surprised you, that told you more about Bob than you even thought?
I don't want to give away too much, but there's some scene.
That's what I'm here to do, is get a scoop. Without spoiling it.
I'm going to just let everybody know. There's a scene in there where his high school team is getting ready to play somebody, and I'm going to just keep it kind of short, that they actually kind of wore like blouses. And I couldn't convince me that Huggs would ever wear something like that. So that's in the documentary.
Okay.
And that blew me away, because he's so proud of that thing too. Like, and he goes to tell the story, and I'm like, ain't no way in hell I would ever wore that. But
he's a veteran of the short era of basketball. You guys basically, your team was one of the college teams that put an end to that with the long shorts, if I remember right.
Yeah, we walked in the door. I mean, I endured that pain in junior college, and I used to have to wear tights under there because I could not deal with my stuff happening while I was.
Now they're kind of they're creeping back up now.
Yeah, they are. But yeah, we played a little part in that.
So I want to, before we wrap up, talk about the two of you. We'll start with you, Corey. I think any UC fan knows of you. 11 seasons in the NBA, more than 2,000 points and rebounds, a great career. What are you up to now besides making movies with Terry?
The podcast.
Oh yeah.
The podcast with the other two.
Yeah, I'm like a serial entrepreneur right now, but I do have a promotional products company. I have my own brand that I'm now finally associated with the University of Cincinnati and promoting. My brand is called Graduate, where we acknowledge and inspire academic achievement. I'm a proponent for education. I was the first one in my family to ever graduate from college, and then also the first one to ever attend a school as precious as Cincinnati. So I've always had that pride about myself, and that's what I do now. I'm also on the athletic advisory council at the University of Cincinnati. So I'm deeply engaged with the university, and now I'm in the film business. So
and sounds like the city, because you're a California guy.
Yeah, yeah.
You were, as you said earlier, a JUCO transfer, which was Bob's playbook, right? Building a team that wasn't necessarily. Can you imagine Bob dealing with the transfer portal, by the way?
We asked that. I don't know if that one made it.
Yeah, oh, no, that answer didn't make it.
Yeah, so why?
Imagine like just how hard he'd be on athletic. More money.
Oh, man. Like,
a lot of people that come to UC to play leave and never come back. But you're kind of rooted here now. Why? Yeah. Why?
Man, I give credit to this city and this institution for allowing me to display my talents to the world. Before I came to Cincinnati, like I tell everybody, that CPAL wasn't, to me, never seen on the west side of the Mississippi. But once we went to the Final Four and achieved the great success we had as a team, man, we were everywhere. And I think a lot of people bought into our persona on how we played and who we are. You know, that Bearcat represented toughness and everything. So once I got done playing, man, it was like a no-brainer. This was home for me, you know, and I've been here ever since. I was talking to my brother because I'm supposed to go home in a couple of weeks. And he was like, man, don't even consider calling this home no more. You done been there longer than you done been here. So that's home for you. So I just have a admiration and a love for the city of Cincinnati.
Man, that brought a tear to my eye. All right. Now, Terry, not your first rodeo here with this documentary. You've done one on Pete Rose that you mentioned, 4192. You did one on Marty Brenneman called How We Looking. How We Looking? Not good.
I think we're looking good here right now.
But you're not limited to sport. You've also done a documentary on the Naked Cowboy.
Yeah, it's I got tagged with the sports thing. I did The Naked Cowboy first on accident. I never wanted to be a documentary filmmaker. I made a mockumentary on karaoke, and I was going to, like, Christopher Guest, right? Best in show type stuff.
Yeah.
And I had a producer friend of mine on that screwed up getting me Davy Jones of the Monkees. And to make it up, he saw The Naked Cowboy wheeling through Party in the Park here at Cincinnati. This is back in 99. And he had been on Stern about 8 times at the time. And they go, what if we get him? I'm like, he's obnoxious. I don't want to do anything with that guy. And so he said, well, I'll be a character in your movie. And then he kept going, well, you ought to make a movie about me. I'm like, I have no desire to make a documentary ever. And
let alone you.
And so I ended up doing it. And then I'm an editor by trade. I've been editing, you know, commercial work. It's great to be in Cincinnati, you know, Procter & Gamble, Fortune 500 company, Salesforce, big client stuff. So I thought that documentaries were an editor's format. You know, you take this big lump of clay and you try to shape it into something. So I got into that. I did a documentary on Simon Kenton High School, 1980-81 team. They won the 9th region championship. I don't know if you remember that story back then. We had Nick Clooney as our narrator on that. And that was the year before Pete. And that gave me the confidence to ask Pete. I said, hey, I just saw the ESPN the film where Tom Sizemore, you know, he's lugging around like he looks like a fat Mo, you know, and from Three Stooges.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a terrible movie on ESPN, and Pete was pissed because, you know, it was awful. And I said, look,
I'd totally forgotten about that.
Oh, God, it was. And Peter Bogdanovich is a very famous director, directed that piece of crap.
That was terrible.
Yeah. And so I got an argument with a buddy of mine who's an advertising agency guy, and he hates Pete. And I said, well, I'm going to make a movie and show you why you care. And so I got a hold of Pete, and he said, all right, you're a Cincinnati guy. I'm going to come up, pitch me, you know. And I said, this is it. That's what we're going to do. So from that, the documentary stuff became easier to sell because you're, again, it's kind of an invasive thing. You know, if I did a documentary on you, I always say this, like, are you going to trust me? You know, you don't know me, right?
Right.
So I've been fortunate that, you know, Marty was a part of the Pete one. So when Marty came around, I idolized him growing up, him and Gary Burbank, when I wanted to get into broadcasting.
Oh, yeah.
And so Marty was like, yeah, I love what you did with Pete. And I don't think I'm a story. You know, they're very humble like that. And that was great.
That's a facade. He was ready to do it, I'm sure.
But that premiere, we had that during COVID at Starlight Drive-In, and because of COVID, you know, being outside. And that's how I met our executive producer, Alan Hilsinger, because he said, hey, do you do other movies? You know, I'm like, yeah, I kind of want to get out of the sports thing. And so he pitched me this book called Smuggler's Ghost, which is about the OG guys, marijuana smugglers that went to Jamaica to bring back weed then.
Back to this area?
Back to America, everywhere. And Cincinnati was one of the things too. But that one we have in the can, and we're pitching that now. So that's a 5-episode series. And then while we were doing that, that's when Alan said, hey, I want to do one on Hugs. And I was like, yeah, you know, this would be great. So trying to get diversity in the stuff that we're doing.
That's awesome.
You know,
congrats on all your success.
Thank you.
So if someone wanted to see some of these past works, where can they find them?
Well, I'm told I don't have any stake in 4192 anymore, but I think it's still on Amazon Prime. Marty, we got a pretty good deal. That's on Apple, iTunes, Google. It's on all of those, which is good. Like I said, Pirates, we're pitching now. We're really getting some great feedback. So hopefully that'll be on something like Paramount Plus or something like that. Same sales agent that's going to be repping Hugs right after our premiere. He wants to use this as a big platform to push it out to the ESPNs, HBOs. So maybe it'll be a package deal. So we're trying to do that. Naked Cowboy, believe it or not, I had somebody request that, and that's my first thing. And I always say this. So I was a raw filmmaker at the time. That's on Tubi.
And it's called
American Icon.
So
shit like that, man. That's an accomplishment.
So even though I'm grew up in Cincinnati, and here I'm at the Enquirer, I have this like big gap in my Cincinnati lifespan because, for a big chunk of time, I was at USA Today, and we had offices in New York. And so one day I'm in downtown New York, Manhattan, I mean, and I see this guy on Times Square, and I'm thinking, oh my God, that guy's totally ripping off the Naked Cowboy. Like, I wonder if he even knows who the Naked Cowboy is. And I get a little closer, and I'm like, boy, he's nailed it. And then I was like, holy beep, that is a Naked Cowboy. So I walked up and I was like, Cincinnati. And he like gave me the thumbs up, and I was like, okay.
He's hilarious. I
could not believe that the guy, you know, when I was in Cincinnati kicking around and I'd see him like crash the opening day parade and mothers like shielding their children's eyes because, you know, here's this mostly naked cowboy.
He had briefs on, man. Yeah. Come on.
He's from Green Hills.
Tidy Whitey's on.
Yeah, Green Hills, and it was funny. Yeah.
So Beyond the Bench, the Bob Huggins legacy. You have your world premiere coming up when?
So that'll be this Friday. We have a VIP gathering, I think starts around 5:30 or 6. And then the show is at 8
at Memorial Hall.
Memorial Hall.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Coach will be there?
Coach is going to be there. I'm going to let Corey tell you the guest list because, again, the man was probably responsible for most of these celebrities that you can name showing up, the former players and stuff like that. So
a lot of the local guys will be there, but Kenyon's going to be there. Nick Van Exel's coming in. We're talking to – I don't know if Eric can't make it because he's recruiting. So, you know, it's a lot of guys based on their schedules right now. I mean, we know the transfer portal is kicking in. So a lot of guys that are in basketball won't be able to make it. But Kenyon and Nick are two of the main guys that will be here for the premiere. And plus, all the local guys will be there.
Steve Logan.
Steve Logan will definitely be there.
All right, Jason's totally there. So you can still get tickets?
I believe there's some general admission.
All right. We'll make sure we include the link when this goes live on the website. Gentlemen, I can't thank you enough for coming in today.
I'm pumped.
I can't wait to see it.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
Definitely. Absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank
no problem.
Yes, thanks.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was a fun trip down Bob Huggins memory lane, wasn't it?
Yeah, it really was. And it's cool to see the way this is now kind of bringing him full circle in Cincinnati, and the fact they're going to debut this here at Memorial Hall. And I expect that place to be packed to the gills on Friday nights. And I think it'll be it'll just be a cool thing. And all those players they interviewed for this. And I think UC fans are going to thoroughly enjoy this.
Well, we're talking about coaching. We're talking about coaches. Yeah. You've written a lot about coaches. You've interviewed a lot of coaches. But Jason, you are also a coach.
Yeah, I've taken this on in recent years. Both my sons, Reed and Roman, are baseball kids, and I never really thought I wouldn't coach, but it's become this real passion area for me. And the friendships that I made with the other dads, and some of whom are my closest friends in the world, and right now between a 13U team and a 9U team, there's 24 kids. And
So you coaching both your kids' teams?
Yeah, I'm an assistant coach on the 13U team, but
for the 11-year-olds, you're the 11-year-old.
But I do everything for both teams: the uniforms to the, somebody's got a snag in their uniform. I got to go down to Cook Sporting Goods, and those guys at Cook's are like.
It's a good thing our office is in close proximity. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Now, 11-year-olds, are they pitching?
There's 9-year-olds.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
And they are pitching. We are playing real regular baseball now.
The nine-year-olds are pitching now.
Yes.
When do they go from the machine to live pitch?
We've never done the machine.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We did the
coach pitch.
There was coach pitch at 7 years old. Okay. And then at 8 years old, there's a hybrid. So the kid pitches, and then there's no walk. So then you get to ball four, and then a coach will come in and finish out the count.
Okay. Lob one in there so get the ball in play.
Sometimes this was last year, 8U. Sometimes I was the best pitcher for the other team because I'd come in and strike our guy out.
You struck out your own player.
And then this year's like
– Throw a low outside – fastball.
Yeah, it was always
one chasing away.
Yes.
Yep.
And then this year they moved up, and they are regular baseball, which, by the way, thanks to Cincinnati.com for being one of our
proud sponsors
of the PYO Patriots 9U.
That is
team.
Awesome. So, yeah. Well, that is a pretty – that's a Cincinnati thing, coaching youth sports. And, when you're talking about the friendships you make
– Yeah.
At this point of your life, with your kids being the ages that they are, it's the parents. I remember, I still keep in touch with some people from when William played soccer way out in Reno. Yeah.
Oh, really?
And I never played soccer, but they just needed somebody to help like corral the kids.
Yeah.
And, that Saturday morning ritual, everybody getting up way too early and,
I'm super
watching some bad soccer.
I'll go to some. Shout out to Charlie Frank and the Reds Community Fund. Charlie's helped me a lot with just some advice on things, and I'm a sponge when it comes to. I've gone to some coaching clinics at the Reds Academy.
We'll talk about that for a second.
Yeah.
So if you are an aspiring baseball coach, you can hone your skills via the Reds.
Yeah, they usually have a couple coaching clinics a year, and they're always very awesome about. And this is for any level, any age, any level of baseball. Whether you're really high level, select baseball travel team to, hey, you got guys that just want to go out there and they're 8 years, 9, 10, whatever, 12 years old, and they just, you know, they just want to play the game. We all should be playing the game for fun. Now, that's the biggest thing. But what I love about the Reds Community Fund is that, or you know, the academy is that they, at the core of it, it's just you want kids to play baseball. It's a hard sport. There's so many great life lessons that are taught from it, and that's we haven't. It's not just we're rolling out there and playing baseball. We're I mean, our big thing for our players or my two teams is that. You know, we're teaching life lessons here. We're playing a long game on the life lessons of what the game and the challenges of the game. As the game, Burl, you're, you know, huge Reds guy, and, you know, it's a game built on failure. You know, the best players, the best hitters in the Hall of Fame hit 300.
Yeah.
You know, 3 out of 10.
They fail 7 times.
Yeah, and trying to convince 9-year-olds that getting – a hit 3 out of 10 times is success is hard. And so,
you know, man, I'm having flashbacks to my own Little League baseball team. There were lots of tears, Jason, like even the toughest kids. Yep. If there was a couple guys on base and then they struck out, fighting back the tears
big
as
time.
A 7, 8, 9, or 10 year old.
It's a game that it gets in your, and we talk about this, like, you know, football or lacrosse or soccer, basketball, even, like, there's something, if you make a mistake and like you miss 3 shots in a row in basketball, there's something that you can do in the immediate that you can make up for that. You can go rebound, you can go play defense, you can go, but a lot of times in baseball, like, there's nothing that you can immediately do. Like football, you know, you missed a tackle, well, on the next play I can go just waylay someone and hit someone and go block someone, whatever. But in baseball, you can feel like, you know, you're on this island by yourself. You just committed an error on a routine ground ball to second, and you a play you've made a million times in practice, and you just airmailed it.
Yep.
You know, it was you're 10, 15 feet away from the first baseman, and you airmailed it. And now you think, oh, crap, like the whole world is watching me right now, and there's nothing I can do about it. Except for we talk about making the next play. Make the next play. Forget about that. Whether the next play is when you're at bat next time or if you're going to be a pitcher, you know, make the next pitch. So we always constantly talk. I got this advice from but I will ask people on the job too. Like when I go to spring training, a lot of times I'll ask Reds guys, Reds people. I've even asked the Stowe guys about some equipment things, like just like uniforms and that kind of stuff. But I'll ask guys for advice on like how to, especially the mental part of the game is it's so hard. It's the hardest sport ever. USA Today did a piece early 2000s on the absolute hardest thing to do in all of sports. What do you think that was? You may have been at USA Today at this. I want to say it was.
Yeah.
It was awesome. It was an awesome piece.
Hit a baseball.
It was.
Right?
Yep. Yeah. Number one hardest. And like the team at USA Today went on this awesome project, and they interviewed tons and tons of people, and I think even some of the journalists even tried some of these things themselves and did this great package. I think it was a front page and 2 pages inside, and the absolute hardest thing is to hit a baseball. I don't remember what number two was, but number two or somewhere on that list may have been to pitch a baseball or to throw strikes.
Yeah.
That's hard, too.
Hitting a golf ball has to be up there, too.
I would think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Just based on my own abilities.
Yeah. But anyway, we
you
talk.
Know,
yeah.
You know, I have to tell you, like, I think baseball builds a lot of character.
Big time.
My first Little League team was a true moment of character building for me and my teammates because – this is before my family moved to Cincinnati. We lived for a couple of years in Zanesville, okay, when we first moved to Ohio. And that was my first year playing organized baseball. And different businesses around town would sponsor each team and pay for the uniforms.
Yep.
All right. And so our sponsor was a flower shop, Griner's Flowers. And our jerseys, it had little type that said Griner's and then big across our chest, Flowers.
Oh,
so we
man.
Were the Flowers, Jason. Oh. The Flowers.
Oh.
The other teams would just laugh at us before the game even started. And it was like, oh, we're going to beat the Flowers. So, like, because, you know, and we didn't win many games. But that was, I mean, we had to truly step up and rise above our nickname, you know. But I think retrospect, that was mean.
See,
some adult should have stepped in and said, "What are we doing here? Who wants to be on a baseball team called the Flowers?"
But see, isn't that a fun memory though?
It is a fun memory.
That's what we say. Like, you know, let's make some memories here. Let's learn some life lessons, and we want to. And for the guys who want to play in high school, help them develop the skills to do that. And then, you know, from there they can, you know, build on, and hopefully, you know, if they want to keep going, they're good enough and go on to college, and you know, maybe there's that one rare guy here and there that can even go beyond that.
And I remember when the game was over, the players all got a little ticket to go to the concession stand.
Nice.
Yes.
See, these are the things you remember.
And the big
make memories.
Yes. And my big dilemma was, am I going to get a slushie or am I going to get a package of Big League Chew?
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's a tough one.
I know. All right. Yeah. Well, enough of the past. Shall we wrap things up?
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast, a production of The Enquirer and Cincinnati.com. Our producer today, the one, the only, Phil Didion.
If you enjoyed the podcast, please subscribe, give us a rating, and share it with a friend who loves all things Cincinnati.
And finally, if you value local journalism and haven't subscribed for full digital access to Cincinnati.com, now is a great time. Just go to Cincinnati.com and click on the subscribe button to see a special offer just for you.
Thanks again for listening, and see you next week.